the things that you do right before you go to bed more so. So like the wind down is an opportunity to entrain your higher self to reflect on like who you want to be in 10 years or to like do a meditation or something like that, sort of emanate throughout the whole night.
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of the Alchemist Lounge. And on today's episode, we have a very loungy episode for you. We have Dr. Dan Gartenberg. And Dr. Dan is an expert in sleep science, and he's the founder of Sleep Space. Dr. Dan is a renowned sleep researcher, he's a speaker, and he's a coach who's dedicated his career to understanding the science of sleep and how it can be optimized to improve health and well-being and so many other things. So in today's podcast, we're going to dive deep into the latest sleep research, explore practical tips and techniques for improving your sleep quality, and we're going to discuss the importance of sleep for overall health, well-being, relationships, all sorts of things. We'll even dig in a little bit about how psychedelics and cannabis affect sleep, because I've heard a lot of conflicting information about that. So whether you're a sleep enthusiast, whether you're struggling with insomnia, or you're just interested in learning more about the science of sleep, you're going to be in for a treat today with an exciting and insightful conversation with Dr. Daniel Gartenberg. And thank you so much for joining the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. And I'll try not to put the audience to sleep here. I think it'll be exciting.
I think so, too. So let's jump in. So when I think about sleep, I actually was thinking through this interview. And I was thinking, you know, breathing, eating, pooping, and sleeping are all the essential activities that every human being engages in. And when you think through those, though, sleep is an activity that has been overlooked for a long time. It's something that you sort of, a lot of the consciousness has been, you know, you kind of get your sleep. Is it 4 hours? Is it 2 hours? Is it based on your body? And so my first question is, how important is sleep for health and well-being?
Yeah, so I would say out of all the things you listed is, I guess it's the thing we do the most besides breathing. And it's essentially the pillar of health that a lot of things rest on. I think often diet, exercise, sleep, breathing sort of encompasses all of those things. We always have
to. You do it regardless.
And there's that great book, Breathe. I don't know if you've checked it out.
I have.
Nestor. So yeah, it's sort of I see it as in the trifecta of diet, exercise, sleep, I see it as like the underlying base of the other two. Because if you're sleep deprived, you're going to be snacking on more fatty foods, you're not going to be able to exercise as well. And then obviously it affects, you know, your decision making, it makes you make riskier decisions. You know, there's a reason why a lot of risky behavior happens at nighttime when people are sleep deprived, for example. There's some great studies how it increases your likelihood to gamble, even reduces your ability to have empathy for someone else and have a sense of humor when someone else makes a joke. And so I find these sort of cognitive aspects of it something that's really often overlooked as well.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you say that because it's very subtle, but now very noticeable for me specifically if I miss a few hours of sleep, where before I think I would just kind of power through and ignore the subtleties of it. Now it's something that I actually realize that it's something that impacts my performance in general. So I'm really curious, what was it that initially had you become interested in the field of sleep science?
Yeah, it was sort of a confluence of factors. I think I probably suffered from delayed sleep phase syndrome in high school, which is actually quite common. Because your circadian rhythm actually shifts as you age. But when you're a teenager, many people can probably relate to wanting to be more of a night owl. there's an evolutionary biology explanation for this, which is you sort of, it's a time when you're supposed to break away from your parents, so you naturally misalign your circadian rhythm with theirs. Unfortunately, most school times, and there's a great TED talk about this, this woman, Wendy Trexel, gave it, about how the school, the start times for schools is basically all mixed up. Younger kids should be going to school earlier because a 5-10-year-old has an earlier circadian rhythm, and a high schooler should go to school later. Because what happens oftentimes is you have to wait. I remember waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning, or no, it was earlier than that. I think it was like I would wake up at 5:30 in the morning to catch like a 6:30 bus, and it would be pitch dark outside. But I'd also go out late on the weekends because, you know, I'm a high schooler. I'm trying to socialize and be cool. What happens there is you get a naturally misaligned circadian rhythm, and it becomes really difficult to fall asleep. And that's called delayed sleep phase syndrome. And then, you know, I come from a family of medical practitioners, and I remember growing up just having them tell me how broken the system was. And so I see sleep as a way into that broken system because it's really more about wellness instead of the illness model, because sleep is literally related to every chronic health disease. So I see sleep as a pathway to addressing those chronic health illnesses. And that's what I've sort of dedicated my life to. Just this idea that, you know, sleep is much more active than we thought it was, basically before the 50s. That's when they first put EEGs on people's heads to figure out that it's a very active process of cleansing out this lymphatic cleansing system of basically damaged neurons that form. It's how we form memories. And I ended up taking this course when I was at University of Wisconsin. I ended up taking this grad level course by a famous professor, Giuliano Tononi, who came up with this theory called the homeostatic sleep hypothesis, which is basically explanation for why we sleep, where in deep sleep, we downregulate all of our interactions during the day, all the activations of our thoughts during the day, and then we replay and integrate that information in REM sleep. Synaptic homeostasis hypothesis.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah, sorry. haven't brushed up on that reading in a while. So anyway, that's, I saw how big of an idea it could be, and I'm just captivated by doing something while you're asleep that enhances your sleep. Because I know it's possible, but I know, but no one has really successfully done it yet.
Yeah. Well, you've said a couple things that I find interesting. First, that your circadian rhythm evolves as you get older. And as I've gotten older, I've seen that specifically. And the other end of it is what I'm hearing is a lot of ways to optimize your sleep. And these days, with products like your product and other products out in the marketplace, sleep optimization has really sort of become a thing. For me personally, I start doing sleep meditation practice before sleep that's made for sleep in order to be able to kind of sink in and have the most optimized sleep possible. What would you say is the importance of optimizing your sleep or being familiar with how your circadian rhythm changes over time?
Yeah, so a couple things there. I mean, one of the best predictors of outcomes is what I like to is metacognition. So basically your awareness of your own body's physiology will help you improve that physiology. So, you know, I always know based on the trackers and a lot of experimentation that I've done on myself where I'm at in my circadian rhythm. And that'll actually, you know, I have that in the back of my mind all the time, and that'll actually inform what my plans are for the day. And I really like what you do there with, it sounds like a really nice bedtime ritual. So, you know, that is one of the hacks that's definitely been shown to work. And there's different, if you're an, and we're going to get into this deeper, but if you're an insomniac, there's a whole slew of solutions that can be quite different than if you're, say, an optimizer or an athlete who's trying to get more deep sleep, for example. Or if you're someone that has a sleep disorder, then there's a whole nother batch of tools. So the metacognition is knowing who you are and then doing the right things based on that to address your unique situation. And, you know, it seems like you've keyed on to the bedtime ritual, and this is, you know, something that we have in our software Sleep Space too. And there's a lot of things out there. There's a lot of solutions. You know, yoga nidra is a really good one. Another really good one is passive muscle relaxation. We just added box breathing. Ben Greenfield really promotes that, and Navy SEALs have been doing that for a long time. Sleep stories, if you're like not into it that much, or even just like nature sounds. We have this ritual around doing ocean waves before and having everything turn red in our homes and then going off to sleep. And another misconception here that people don't realize is having that ritual will not only help you fall asleep, but it can also help you stay asleep, because it sort of sets the stage for a relaxing process later on in the night.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, because there are so many nights where I've been in a position where suddenly I wake up at 2, 3 a.m. and end up missing out on maybe a quarter, if not more, of the night's sleep, which has some pretty profound effects on the rest of my day. And hearing that there's actually ways to be able to optimize and be able to deepen sleep, specifically in longevity, is awesome. I have a question. I'd actually listened recently to something very interesting that a host of a daily TM practice that I do, Bob Roth, had brought up around sleep specifically. And what it was that there are sleeping patterns that have changed throughout the course of his human history. And I think it was maybe 200, 500 years ago, people's sleeping patterns were completely different than they are today. I think what I heard was that people would actually sleep, like wake up in the middle of the night, do work, and then go back to sleep. And that was optimized. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, why in history were patterns so different?
Yeah, so I generally think that a consolidated period of sleep is a healthy way to sleep. I think it mainly speaks to how adaptive our cycles are. This comes from actually literature. You know, there's one of the oldest manuscripts is Canterbury Tales, and by Chaucer. And in that manuscript, he'll talk, you know, he goes through people in this village in the 1300s, basically, and he'll speak to the second sleep, as they say in that. And there's other references to this in literature. And basically the idea is that you'd wake up in the middle of the night, sort of putter around a little bit, maybe even socialize a little bit, and then go back to sleep. And, you know, there's sort of a lot of explanations for what might be going on here. And we all have different chronotypes, probably for an evolutionary reason. Namely, it's nice if you're a hunter-gatherer for thousands and thousands of years in a tribe of 100, it's pretty beneficial for someone to always be up at any hour of the night. So there's probably these, like, and that's partly why different people have different chronotypes, probably, the morning larks, the night owls. But, you know, there's probably this, like, male genetic thing of being like a warrior on guard at night and like a sort of a always on watch night owl sort of situation. So I think generally, especially given our society's structure, it's generally better to try to consolidate your sleep. But there are situations where that's, you know, not possible too. And then you can take the steps to getting the most out of your sleep. Sometimes taking a nap, for example, in your afternoon siesta is another sort of way to break up your sleep that can be healthy.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I went this past month, I went to the Love Burn, which is a regional Burning Man event. And one thing that we do there, you know, when you go to these regional burn type of events, you normally stay up pretty late if, you know, part of the whole experience is seeing the sunrise. So I've made it a habit to sleep from 6 p.m. to around 10 or 11 p.m. and then wake up and then be energized in order to enjoy the rest of the evening. You still don't get as much sleep as you probably need, but it speaks to that point. And I also have been using sleep medications, and I'm really curious about your opinion on sleep medicines. Do they help us improve sleep? And what are some of the side effects? Because these days, you know, they all claim very minimal side effects, but I'm wondering if the sleep aid is something that is detrimental or actually helpful.
Yeah, so I'll get to both of those points. So I think that's a very intuitive thing that you're doing, and it's actually called something. It's called a prophylactic nap. So there's different types of naps that we can take, and a good strategy for anticipated sleep deprivation is this prophylactic nap strategy, where you take a little nap. Basically, you're building up your sleep homeostasis. You're building up, you're reducing your sleep drive as much as possible in anticipation of sleep depriving yourself later. And that will reduce the impact of the sleep deprivation. And that is exactly what you should be doing in anticipation of your sleep deprivation. So good job.
Perfect.
You get a good start.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, the other thing is, yeah, the medications. So there's a place for medications in some situations, but a lot of what I'm trying to do and validate is first and foremost the behavioral solutions. And if you are someone that has insomnia, for example, the recommended thing is not a sleeping pill. It is actually cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, which a lot of people maybe don't really fully understand what that actually means. But mainly it's about changing your thoughts, your feelings, and your behaviors around sleep. And there's sort of a six-week module where every week you get a different component of it. And that is the most effective way to treat something like insomnia. And that's what doctors should be doing. The problem is there have to be, I forget the exact statistics, but it's like each doctor trained in this would have to see 10,000 people with insomnia in order to meet the need. Basically, psychologists are trained in this. And usually what happens is you go to your doctor, you complain about a sleep problem, and then they give you a sleep pill. That's typically what happens. The problem with a lot of the sleeping pills is also it sort of can be a Band-Aid. That being said, in certain situations, it could also be the right thing, especially alongside cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. But it can also negatively impact deep sleep, so the quality of your sleep. And if you're an older person, a lot of people, older people end up having sleep problems. It can reduce the likelihood that you fall at night, which is actually a huge public health issue. So there's definitely downsides. There's a place for the medications, but cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia should be the first line of defense. And we're trying to make that more accessible for people. That's sort of one of my main passions.
So get to the root of the issue, as opposed to potentially taking medicines that may cover it up, but may not actually resolve the actual issue, right? The deep down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's right. How do you know if it's conditions that are affecting your sleep? For example, I've heard that there's certain conditions to be set up to improve quality of sleep. Like, for example, a colder room. There's now these, I don't know what they're called, these really heavy blankets. Maybe they're called heavy blankets that somehow compress you, right? And there's all sorts of, brown noise, that certain types of noises. So how relevant, how important is it that the conditions that you're sleeping in are set in a certain way?
Yeah, so the typical thing in sleep science that they say is dark, quiet, cool. 60 to 67, act pretty cool in your bedroom environment. And body temperature plays this whole role in falling asleep. Basically, a reduction in internal body temperature helps you fall asleep. Counterintuitively, if you take like a warm shower, that'll actually, your internal body temperature will reduce because in response to the warmth from the shower. So that can sort of be a way to help you fall asleep at night, for example. I'm all about the sounds. So, we brought people into a sleep lab at Penn State, hooked them up to electrodes for 24 hours a day for 3 days, and systematically played sounds at night to try to understand how to use sounds to enhance people's sleep. We're studying this phenomenon called deep sleep stimulation. And basically, you play a pink noise sound that's entrained to people's deep sleep brainwaves. And we showed a couple things. One thing is we built models for how sounds can disrupt sleep. And that's why I do believe that brown noise, we have something called a dynamic sound machine that sort of adjusts based on your sleep state. It's like a smart sound machine. These things can unequivocally help, because I've seen even things that you wouldn't think impact you can impact your sleep quality. I've seen even like an air conditioner turning on wake up someone's brain in the lab, because I was like looking at their brain waves while they were in the other room. And so you would see the air conditioner would turn on, their brain would wake up for like a minute, and then they'd fall back to sleep basically. And so it's the abruptness of the sound that's disruptive. Again, for that evolution, I'm harping on evolution here a little bit. Basically, you don't want a predator to sneak up on you in the middle of the night. So we're most sensitive to abrupt noises. So any abrupt sound will be disruptive to your sleep, and you can wake up for less than 2 minutes and be completely amnesic to it, so you won't remember. So basically rounding out these disruptive noises with a sound machine and then trying to stimulate these deep sleep brainwaves has been one of the main strategies that I've been focused on.
Yeah.
Honestly, one of the biggest hacks that I've done is getting a dark out blind. I mean, it just makes a huge difference. And you can get these like stickers, these blackout stickers on Amazon for like $9. Just any kind of light in your room, any kind of phone charger. I actually manufacture this special phone charger that has no light emitting from it, because any kind of light is not going to be good. You want it to be pitch black, basically. And so, yeah, those are all things. And there's so many things that can help, and what might help for one person might, you know, not be the best thing for someone else. So part of what I want is a way to validate when something is working. And that's a big part of the technology that we've been working on.
Yeah, that's a great intro into one of the next questions I had. And I just want to reflect that I have a cat that every morning around 4:30 or 5 shows up next to my bed to get fed. And the cat's presence is just like known, and I just wake up. And it's interesting that way, that there is no loud noise, but just the fact that the cat has come around me somehow has sparked something inside me that has me just wake up and suddenly go feed the cat. And another piece of it is, you know, what's interesting is that before I go to sleep, if there's something that needs to be done the next day, almost 10 out of 10 of the times, even if I set an alarm, I will wake up prior to that alarm and just sort of just be awake. And it's almost the intention prior to going to sleep somehow makes an imprint on my sleeping of that night, and then I end up waking up. I don't know if that's unique to me, and you may say, hey, that's completely unique to you, Alex, but it sounds like something that I'd like to learn more about. Is there a reason why that is?
Yeah, so a couple things there with the cat, and I used to have a cat too, and they're nocturnal creatures, so they can be tricky to share a sleep environment with. And part of this is, again, with like thinking of like who you are and what are the things that you can do that are unique to your situation. And, you know, everyone should be thinking along those lines. And so it seems like for you, dealing with this cat situation is one of the maybe best biohacks for you to improving your sleep quality, maybe get you to sleep in. I wouldn't be surprised if the cat is like knocking you a little bit and maybe you're not subconsciously aware. It's like meowing or doing something. Who knows? Maybe there's a smell that you're sensitive to or something, some kind of presence that the cat has. But figuring out a way, and I've actually navigated this with some people, they have these solutions of timing the delivery of food for the animals. Have you considered something like that? Like a mechanism that'll automatically feed the cat?
Yeah, I have. I actually have an automatic cat feeder, but I have one for the dry food and not for the wet food. So she knows if you want wet food, you show up around 4:30 or 5 and he'll get up and he'll, you know, do what he does as my servant, which is open up cat food. So
yeah, I guess that's the trick. Cats can be very fickle and picky animals, I suppose. So I guess my next invention is a wet cat food dispenser. That's going to be my next passion. I don't think that exists on the market yet. I don't know. I know you figured out the dry food one, but the wet, that could be a little bit tricky, but maybe it exists. Maybe you should look into that.
Get it, and I will buy it right away.
Okay. The other thing is waking up before the alarm clock. So there is like a biological system for this, you know, so we have this 24-hour circadian rhythm, and there's actually a brain region called the striatum that's sort of at the heart of this central inner clock of our brains. There's some theories that it's sort of modulated by our heart rate. So like subconsciously, our brain is constantly calculating time by the feedback of our heart rate. And there's some artificial intelligence models that I've worked on that involve stuff like that. For example, some people have like are really actually good at this. It can be a sort of like a skill. And if you have certain neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's disease, this can actually be impacted. So essentially you have this mechanism that's constantly keeping track of time. And for whatever reason, I don't totally know the science of it, but you know, if you have an early flight, if you're particularly anxious about waking up at something in the morning, there's some kind of mechanism where you're more likely to like wake up earlier. So that's sort of a thing where if you want to be able to sleep in, you know, having a little wiggle room in the morning could be, and not being so stressful about what you have to do the next day is something that can help with that if you're having problems not being able to sleep in.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like how there's still mystery behind some of this as well, right? I mean, the brain is just such a fascinating and mysterious technology. You know, we're just discovering so much more. So talking to you as a sleep science expert and a sleep scientist and seeing that there's still so much that you're learning is just so interesting. And I want to get into sleep space. I want to learn a little bit more about sleep space. So can you explain the technology behind sleep space and how it works to help people get better sleep?
Yeah. So basically, you know, there's so many wearables out there. There's so many solutions out there. Something that you might not realize is like my Oura Ring that I have on right now. Mm-hmm. It actually tracks sleep after the night has completed. So it's not a real-time sleep tracker. It's actually sort of an advanced technology to be able to track sleep during sleep. But in order to do something to enhance sleep, you have to be able to track it while it's happening. So basically, there's no way for this Oura Ring, a Garmin, a Fitbit, a Whoop, they're all analyzing my sleep after it's occurred. You can actually, it's a little bit easier to predict which stages of sleep you're in after you have the entire night of data. We built a model that predicts sleep in real time. And so every 30 seconds, it's saying what stage of sleep you're in. And we're doing that in order to adjust the sound that we play at night. We'll play the sound. If we detect that it's sort of waking you up a little bit, we'll dial it back. And it'll basically tune to where you're at in your sleep cycle in order to enhance your sleep. And so we're playing sounds both to block out noise pollution and then playing sounds to also enhance these deep sleep delta waves. And it'll work with an Apple Watch, or you can have your phone in this little mechanism that slides under your bed, or you could simply put your phone on your bed. Now, the tricky thing with this is the phone is often the culprit to a lot of bad habits. And so that's sort of the dynamic thing. And, you know, I work with a lot of people that are very concerned with like EMFs from the phone and stuff like this. So we make sure that the whole system can also work offline. That's sort of an important aspect of the technology. It's just sort of a difficult thing to do too. And it will integrate with Oura, Whoop, Fitbit, all these things. And then it'll also control the lights in your bedroom. And so we have this nice ritual where the lights will dim red at my wind down. It'll automatically play ocean waves. Then it'll go into this dynamic mask that adjusts the sounds for deepening sleep. And then it'll wake you up gradually in a lighter sleep stage and the lights will brighten up. And you can wake up with like a morning affirmation. And then we have basically 20 coaches that are specialized in almost every aspect of sleep. Because as you said, I only know so much too. And I've been studying this for hardcore for like 15 years. So we're trying to empower the coaches to create their own programs and then validate which things are the most effective for different types of people. Because, you know, there's so many supplements, there's so many solutions, there's so many coaches, there's psychologists. What actually helps you get more deep sleep? That's something that it's really hard for people to know what's actually helping them with their sleep. So we're trying to take out the mystery a little bit with this sleep operating system, which is the way I like to think about it.
I got it. So it actually supports and works with other tools that people may already be using. And in terms of all of the data, all of the information, and frankly, conflicting information that's out in the sort of the public sphere right now, having coaches that are building sort of customized types of sleep routines, techniques that depend upon each individual, is that what you see as being one of the important components?
Yeah, I think that the person at the other end of the line is going to be an essential part for the future. Like, and I'm an AI guy. So, I mean, we make like AI chatbots for each of the coaches, for example. But I think that empathy of another human being, you can't beat it. And there's actually some good science showing that once the person is onto the fact that they're talking to a chatbot, the chatbot becomes less effective, basically. It's getting really good at maybe tricking you for a while. And there is a place for the chatbot. But at the end of the day, a human being empathizing with another human being, there's no replacement for that, I believe.
Yeah. And you mentioned something earlier I wanted to touch on is that, you know, the phone, right, being so close to the bed. And in today's people, in today's society where people are just glued to their phones, my daughters, for example, I think they go to sleep with their phones like on their chest because they scroll TikTok and then they fall asleep, right? So how can the app help people that are enhancing their sleep quality and have these sort of addictive relationship with their phones, right?
Yeah. So basically there's five ways to track sleep in my system. And if you have a phone addiction, sorry, I hate to, it's a little complicated, which is part of my problem.
But
we have a form factor. It won't be as accurate, but you can place the phone, you know, on a nightstand table out of arm's reach, for example. You'll still be able to get all the sounds and everything to some degree, and it can still help to some degree. But if you really have a phone addiction, that's sort of what I would recommend. I have this mechanism where you put it at the base of your bed. So it is out of reach. You have to like get up and go get the phone. And basically, so you're not sleeping with the phone in bed with you. And if you have it offline, that also helps with the phone addiction thing. So it basically slides under the mattress and turns your mattress into a smart bed.
Very cool.
So you can put it at the base of your, sorry?
That sounds very cool.
Yeah. So you can put it at the base of your bed. It's a little bit harder to get. I'm going to make another form factor if I get my next phase of grant funding, where we basically, you've put the phone in this mechanism and it's basically a Faraday cage that makes it, you know, you have to lift something to get it out and it blocks all the electricity. That's my next version of the tech. But so basically the phone is a huge culprit to these problems for a couple reasons. The blue light is not so great. You sort of want red light at night, and there's this suprachiasmatic nucleus thing in your brain because you have photoreceptors in your eye, and that the suprachiasmatic nucleus controls the release of melatonin. And when you basically get blue light, you're messing with this system. Basically, you're inhibiting melatonin with the blue light. So that's why you take melatonin at night. It's the same system, basically. But I think that the bigger problem is actually like the dopaminergic cortisol releasing thing that happens when you doom scroll. I think that's probably the bigger thing. It's a very activating experience. And it's a, you should be winding down. It's like your neurochemistry should almost be opposite of that experience when you're trying to go to bed. So instead of looking through your phone, and you also ingrain and remember the things that you do right before you go to bed more so. So like the wind down is an opportunity to entrain your higher self to reflect on like who you want to be in 10 years or to like do a meditation or something like that, sort of emanate throughout the whole night more so than if you were to say doom scroll 3 hours before bed. You know, that window, it's like an opportunity. And something I'm really interested in is this sort of tension between consciousness and unconsciousness. Those are opportunities to incept our higher selves, basically. And it gets really weird with like inception and stuff like this. But there's something called targeted memory reactivation, where you could sort of create associations with music and stuff, and we can get into how the role that psychedelics play in some of this as well. You can create these associations and then replay them when you're at different stages of consciousness between consciousness and unconsciousness, and then ingrain that information more into your long-term memory and character. Gets a little weird.
Wow. That's very cool. So you can begin to actually transform your waking hours in more ways than just sort of general health. You can transform how you're being in the world based on optimizing sleep. Does that sound right? Like actually you can have transformational sleep and it can sort of fall in line with other practices that you have. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. I mean, just to be clear on like what I'm talking, the classic study is basically, and this is what I've sort of riffed on for a while, the classic study is you smell roses while you're doing some kind of cognitive assessment, and then you reintroduce the smell of roses into different sleep cycles, and then you do better on the cognitive assessment the next day through that association that was built and then reintroduced during sleep.
Wow. That's so interesting. You're blowing my mind here, Dr. Dan. So in that, well, you talked a little bit about, you know, sort of psychedelics. I'm curious how those who either microdose or do other natural sorts of medicines in the psychedelic world, are they known to affect sleeping patterns? Are they supportive of sleeping patterns, or is there no sort of relation between the two?
For sure. So I think you were talking about marijuana too a little bit before as well. So that's where most of the science has come. And, you know, there's really strong evidence that that marijuana inhibits your REM sleep. And, you know, I've personally experienced this as well. You know, I stopped smoking weed a little while ago, and I definitely experiencing intense dreams afterwards because marijuana inhibits your dreams. And a famous researcher, Matthew Walker, probably like the most famous sleep researcher, he sort of rails on marijuana a lot. I don't necessarily know. Sort of my hypothesis for what's happening here is I think when you smoke weed, it sort of makes you experience dreams more during the day, like the not real dreams, but the types of brain waves, sort of more the theta brain waves associated with dreaming. So maybe it's not, this is sort of my theory, and you know, it clearly inhibits REM sleep, which is bad. You might consider bad. Maybe it's not so bad. This is just sort of my Dr. Dan theory. Maybe it's more that you are experiencing those sorts of brain waves during the day, which is why you're not experiencing them so much at night. So that's just sort of an alternative take on it. It's probably not the best thing in the world.
But well, I've heard that before, and I've actually experienced more lucid dreaming when I had taken some time off marijuana over a long period of time, which was interesting. The plots of my dreams, I could remember them the next day, and they were more adventurous. But I want to touch on something I'm personally really curious about, which is lucid dreaming. And is there science that explains why that happens. If you could kind of explain that a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, there's this great book that explains you can train yourself to lucid dream by Stephen LeBerg and Howard Rangold, Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming. And they walk through a series of strategies that you can do to entrain yourself to lucid dream. A simple one is to just sort of ask yourself during the day a lot of times, am I awake or am I asleep? Because the things we do during the day end up popping up in our dreams. And so we also actually have a lucid dream promoting function in the app, of course, because we're constantly detecting sleep in real time. So we'll play a cue. So you can basically, it's like a thunderstorm kind of cue. Mm-hmm. So you can listen to this cue during the day, ask yourself if you're awake or asleep, replay the cue while you're likely to be in a dream state, and then be more likely to have a lucid dream. Mm-hmm. People, they've done really cool studies on expert lucid dreamers, and they've definitely shown that it is possible. The only thing that you can move when you're dreaming are your eyes, basically. That's why they call it rapid eye movement, because your whole body's paralyzed except for your eyes. And they've brought these super lucid dreamer people into the lab, and they figured out a way. I forget all the nuances to the study, but basically expert lucid dreamers would move their eyes in certain ways, showing that they were lucid in their dream and that they could control their dream. So, I mean, there is a way to do it. I'm not the best. I'm trying to work on it myself, actually. It's sort of one of my next forays into the science of all this. But I think being able to control your dreams and having a real relationship with your dreams is an important part of understanding your subconscious world, basically.
Yeah,
You know, magic mushrooms and acid is another way of tapping into that.
That's right. That is fascinating. So there are ways you can actually hack lucid dreams and be able to have more of them, which is just something else. Thank you for sharing that. What was the name of that book that you recommended?
Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming, A Step-by-Step Guide.
Got it. I'm going to pick that up. Okay, we're coming up to the end. I have one last question for you. You mentioned a few sort of self-care activities. What are the types of self-care that you recommend doing during your waking hours to improve your sleep? And it could be include diet as well. Are there certain foods? Are there certain things you can do? Please share.
Yeah, so it can be a little bit complicated. Basically, regularity is your friend. So having regular, and this is where, like, you know, I've done some of the intermittent fasting things, and I think there is some benefit to it. But being regular in when you eat, when you wake up, the more regular you are in all those things, the more cues that your body has. Obviously, sunlight, getting morning sunlight, sets this whole system up. These things are called Zeitgebers, which is a German word for timekeeper. Basically, those activities result in releasing different hormones that makes your circadian rhythm stronger. And the more, you know, your circadian rhythm peaks in the morning, it has a little dip in your siesta time, it has another peak, and then it goes down again. And what happens when we get older a lot of times is you get a flatter circadian rhythm due to like chronic stress and being on pharmaceuticals and stuff like this. But we can always strengthen our circadian rhythm the more that we're regular with these activities. And so, for example, if you wanted to do like a 50, and there's strategies for this too. You know, I think there is some good evidence for maybe doing a little bit of an intermittent fast and, you know, doing a big fast periodically. But be aware of your circadian rhythm when you're doing it. So, for example, if you're going to fast early in the day, it's better to, you know, do your workout not at that time. You know, do it, align it to when you're eating your food, basically. You want those things to match up. So that's one of the pieces of advice.
That's very, very helpful. And for those that are interested in learning more about sleep space or getting more information from you, where would you recommend they look?
Yeah, I mean, we have a bunch of free tools, free sleep assessments at sleepspace.com. We have a guide for falling asleep, a guide for deeper sleep. It's all free. And you can also try out the software too. So yeah, just sleepspace.com. It's all there.
Beautiful. And you guys will see, if you look in the bio on the link, we have a link to Sleep Space. We also have a link to a TED Talk that Dr. Dan gave around this very topic. We are so like illuminated now. I'll tell you, there is so much information that is out there, and I appreciate you breaking down some of it, kind of making some pragmatic advice and some tips. And what would you say you would want to leave our listeners with after listening to you and all of your advice on sleep? What would you say the big thing they should leave with?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I always say. Think about your sleep and how it's been in the last week. What are the things that you think are most impacting your sleep? And, you know, it might be your cat wanting wet food in the morning. I think we found what Alex, you know, at what Alex's might be. Mine recently was addressing, and I'm always trying to figure this out for me, and there's always a next thing. Like, one, my recent thing, just as an example, was addressing dust mites and allergies in my bed. And I got these special things that I put on my pillows now to try to mitigate that. In New York City, there's a lot of dust mites, basically. And I'm highly aware, and I found out I'm highly allergic to them. So figure out, you know, have that metacognition, figure out what's going on for you, and then take the steps to try to get a deeper sleep.
So remember that it is unique to you, and like look into your own sleep pattern, your own metacognition, and find those answers there. And thank you so much. This, first of all, your product is much different than anything out in the marketplace. It takes a lot into account, including those who are addicted to their phones, which I think is fascinating. Thank you so much, Dr. Dan, for coming on the show. You've brought so much insight and you've illuminated so much for me specifically. I'm looking forward to the new technology around the wet cat food opener. I'll be your first customer there. And there's still a lot of mystery in sleep. You've been able to give us some pragmatic tips on how to deal with our own sleep patterns, how to optimize sleep patterns, and the potentiality for being able to actually optimize lucid dreams and get better health, better well-being through better sleep. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening in to the Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at the Alchemist Lounge.